Well, hello, and welcome back to Flips the Focus. We're here to amplify female voices in tech. I am Jen Dobby, and I'm a creative director at Hotwire Australia. I am also a tech sticky beak and a teller of female-led stories. I'm really excited about today's guest. She's somebody who our mutual work put me in the line of, and I was so impressed by her, her ideation, the way that she presents herself and the passion within which she talks. I knew I really wanted to have her on the podcast so I could share her story with you as well. Now, her idea sprang to life as part of a creative brainstorm. And once she'd had that and it had taken hold in her brain, it seems to have changed the course of her life. Lucy Keogh is here today to tell us how Tap the Gap can help change our lives too. Welcome, Lucy.
Hello, good morning. Thanks so much for having me. Real pleasure.
I think what would be super useful for us and for our listeners is if we take it back a couple of steps and talk a bit about the space that you're operating in. So when we first started talking about this, one of the things you educated me on that I was super surprised by is that women are set to end up with 28% less cash in our super than men. And I just found that so extraordinary.
There's something so unfair about that, considering that the paid work that women do, huge part of the GDP, it's like 60%. We're basically powering the economy. We're not getting paid for it. And then at the end, we end up with less. So it's a huge problem, a problem that's gaining more awareness. But I think a lot of women, they're probably aware of parts of it, but they don't understand or they're not aware of how astronomical the effect can be in like 30 or 40 years' time when you're set to retire. And there's not much you can do about it when you're 65, but there is something that we can all do about it right now. That's where it gets really exciting for me. So I went and did a course at the end of last year, this end of 2023, to really grow my understanding of innovation and help myself at work in terms of not just what's being created, but how do people come up with products? How do they solve problems? Because it's very different from the advertising space, more different than I predicted. So I was doing this program. It's called Start Mate Launch Club. It's essentially 10 weeks where you come along, you have an idea or a problem space, they would call it, and you learn all the ways that you can validate that problem space. And so I did that and I came along and I actually had quite a different topic that I was looking at. But as my journey unfolded, I was talking to people. I connected with a woman who was really well working in this space around wealth and women, and particularly superannuation. So we started chatting because, you know, I knew that space really well. I'd been working on it for 3 years. I felt really passionate about it. And then I had this moment, which was quite random. I went along to this networking event, didn't know anyone, ended up talking to this investor, and he said, you know what? No one has cracked women in wealth. No one. And we started to talk and I was like, but why? But this. And we were bouncing off each other. I was chatting to this other woman and then it kind of came together and I thought, there's logic here, right? There's something we can do. So I went home, scribbled up this pitch deck, worked with this woman over the weekend who, you know, has a slightly different background to me, more on the legal side of wealth. And we presented this idea. And it came third in the pitch night and people had this overwhelming, you know, response to it. And we thought, hold on a minute, there's something in this, right? And it was accumulation of conversations as well as some thinking we'd done in the ad space, but that had never really seen the light of day. So it was really validating to hear that out there in the big world, there were people thinking about this too, but in a different way. So, you know, we kind of set off, the woman that I worked with, who's lovely, Lucia, she said, look, this is not really for me. I don't want to keep, you know, going at this rate, which is a fast rate that you have to move. I've learned in startup world. I thought advertising was fast, but so I really just put my head down and dug into that and validated this idea further and quickly found myself in this sort of next level of the Start Mate program, which was talking to 10 investors, like 10 minutes with 10 different investors. And that was probably my biggest learning coming from that ad world about, well, it's enough to have an idea, but who's going to pay for it? And, you know, what part of that will they pay for? Are they just saying that they would because they like you? You know, learning how to interview people properly and really understand customers and be driven to create your product via customers as opposed to your thinking is probably one of the biggest shift changes that I had to make.
So yeah, Lucy, what I find so interesting about that is you've started transforming the way you think as well, which is how are you presenting this opportunity to founders?
That's exactly right. So the idea is a very, very small part of it, really working out what is my market, who's going to pay for it and why, you know, what's the potential as well of that. And who are the competitors in this space? And there are a lot, you know, there's a lot kind of on the periphery. And that led me to dig in a little bit deeper into this area and go, okay, yeah, this is a great idea. People really love it. But who else is doing it well? Or who's sitting right beside me doing something similar, but actually could jump into that space? So you have to be thinking three or four steps ahead as you're kind of moving through it. So the process for me was getting some early investor feedback, which I was really fortunate to have through the StartMate Accelerator application, where I got through to that first round.
So talk to us about that. Was that your 10 investors for 10 minutes? Is that that? Talk to us about that. That sounds so fascinating.
Yeah, so look, StartMate, who I love StartMate, one of Australia's biggest communities for startups. And they do a number of programs and they also have an accelerator program twice a year. And then if you get to the first round, which I did, you get to talk to 10 investors for 10 minutes and they ask you a whole range of questions. And that can be anything from the product to your market to who are you and why should I invest in you. And I learned so much, but I would say the comments from two investors there helped send me on the trajectory that I'm on now. And it was really valuable. I followed up with them afterwards, spoke with them, took on board their feedback, and then problem solved again. So for me, it's been a real, it's like a bit of a leapfrog. You go from one point, you learn some more information, you go to the other, you're investigating and ideating at the same time.
I think that's amazing. And, you know, as somebody with a obviously shared advertising background, I love the way that you talk about the process. Some of it is so similar to what we do, you know, a concept and then there's feedback. And then, but I think the reality of this is, you know, we go into something and we work with a team of people who are, you know, costing things and we've got various different ways of working with the client to see what the budget's going to be. You need to do all of that work and bring it to the table, you know, first time out. So that feedback must have been incredibly useful for you in those early stages.
That helped move me forward because it's about crossing things off the list. Is this going to work? No, next thing. Is that going to work? Oh, maybe. That's interesting. Okay, I'll go and find that out. Then I'll go back to my customers. I'll see if that's right. And you're building a case or a story for this product as you go. So that's been really helpful to connect to this community. And I think the community aspect of startup world is something I've really, really enjoyed.
Yeah. And I think that ongoing mindset of kind of constant iteration can be, again, that's somewhat different and somewhat removed from your previous world in which, you know, you're generally speaking working for some kind of deadline and you create it and you finish it and then often you wrap it up in a bow and you're done and you move on to the next thing. Whereas this, sure, you create and you iterate and you move on, but it's you know, there are moments where something is finished. But really, if your product is tap the gap, you're always going to be improving and tweaking and adding and iterating. And I guess that must be another thing that's quite difficult to get used to or quite big to get used to.
Yeah, I agree. But I think what's interesting is, you know, that's that moment, I guess, that I felt, is this something I really want to do and really lean into? And there was probably two parts of that that helped me make my decision. Being a founder is at times, I guess, probably slightly lonely. And you know me, I like to be around people. So one of my biggest learnings has been really a note I took on board from the Launch Club program, which the CEO of StartMate, Michael Batko, who's a legend, great human, he gave a lecture on this idea of increasing your surface area for luck to strike. And what he means by that is reach out to people and talk to people, because you don't actually know where that might lead. That person might know someone else. They might know someone else. And it's this sort of 6 degrees of separation that ends up unlocking a lot of doors for you. Number one, you don't feel so alone, and it helps you move through your process faster. So at first I was a bit mindful. I'm not amazingly natural at reaching out to people and talking to them. But once I did that, I just found this huge result coming from it, where it helped me move faster. It helped my traction. It helped me cross things off my list, which I might have sat on for weeks. But I thought, you know what? I don't know everything about that. I'm going to ask that person. And by framing the conversation in the right way, people are really open to helping you. And it does build your network. And I found that I can then go back to those people if we've made a connection, even if it's 3 months down the track, and ask them a question, or ask them, do you know anyone in this space? And that's really helped me feel not so alone.
It's interesting you talk about skill sets there, because, you know, you've said you don't always find it, you know, it's not a supernatural move for you to reach out to people you don't know. But on the other hand, you have this superpower of your copywriting. So you do know exactly how to craft a message, you know, when you found the right person to talk to, you know exactly what to say.
This is true. This does come in handy, I have to say. Yes.
And I think that's definitely an advantage. It's interesting, this. I want to just make sure I'm getting the figures right. But if we look at the State of Australian Startup Funding Report, and we try and think about that context of this founder world and the founder environment that you're working with, and we look at the stats that, you know, the female-only founders' investment increased from 2% in 2022 to 4% in 2023. So, given that you're now operating in a world where 96% of funding is going to male-only led startups, talk to us a little bit about the strategies you have in place, or the steps that you're taking to try and overcome maybe potential gender bias that appears to be happening in funding. If we go according to the data, that's the situation. So how are you overcoming that?
I think one of the most inspiring experiences I had this year was watching Show Her Money, which is a documentary put together by some women really talking about female founders, female VCs, and angel investors who are female, and really talking about how we can change the system. And the reality is that there's a huge amount of women out there who are solving problems that only women will understand, right? And that's a really hard bias to get over. So where we see the change coming is from female angel investors who are investing in these products to actually help lift these women up, because it's not that women don't have great ideas, but we're just not getting our voices heard, and we're not getting that seat at the table. So look, my experience has been a couple of things. I feel like I have to be really pinned down on everything I'm talking about. There's no room for fluffiness. You know, I understand my subject matter really clearly. I'm constantly looking at research. I don't want to be seen as here's a woman with an idea. You know, I'm serious about this product, and I've done a lot of, I've put in hundreds of hours into it. So being a subject matter expert is really important. And secondly, building that network with male VCs out there, or just men in the industry in general. And I do ask them for their feedback on my pitch deck. I do ask them, what's wrong with this solution for you? What don't you understand? How can I make it clearer? You know, I want to understand, because women get it pretty much straight away. They really do. But I'm not sort of hiding behind the fact that, a male audience, much for my end customer and also my investor, really needs to believe in me and understand that space. So I've had a lot of great learnings in that that area as well. And it's building relationships too.
Having spoken to a lot of women across the tech environment as part of Flip the Focus, there's definitely themes that are coming through now. And I think, you know, around the male-female funding split, a couple of things upon which people seem to be agreed now, you know, we need kind of support and movement bottom up and top down. And then the other thing you said that was so interesting to me is not necessarily around funding. I remember when we talked to Claire Waring about Gever, she also said, you know, it's quite a deliberate choice that they made as well, which was not to go for the funding straight away, to have the MVP, to have trials, to have proof of concept, proof of community, and really let some of the word of mouth do some work for you before you seek funding, which I think is interesting. But my question to you, I listened to you answering that question, and I don't know that it's something that we can solve, Lucy, but I'm just interested to know your opinion. So much of what you said there sounds often like stereotypical conversations that we as women have, where, you know, you're very well researched, you're doing the right work, you're building up your market value prop, you're doing all these accelerators. Do you think female founders are like, right, we have to have everything 100% perfect and watertight before we go in? Because you know that the bar's going to be set higher for you.
Yeah, look, it's a great question. I do think there is a part of that, and perhaps that is part of my makeup as well, to know that I want to feel that I'm across it. Because for me, if I'm asking for someone's money, you know, that's a partnership deal. I'm not taking it lightly and saying I'm just going to have a run at this. I want to know that it is going to work, you know, and that's probably that practical side of me. And I have spent longer validating rather than sinking lots of money into building straight away. So that's a slightly different way. Everyone works differently. There is a little bit of that. However, you know, I just think that when I invite someone to invest in me, it's a big deal, right? Like, I'm giving over some part of the power of my company to someone else, and I want to be in a position to make that decision and make it right. I don't want anyone's money. I know I'll hit a point where maybe it will feel like that, but it's really important who I partner with to make this thing right. And there has been a lot of feedback of, oh, people have tried in this space and they've failed and they haven't found product market fit. And I just believe, well, yeah, they're not me. They're not me. They don't have the view on it that I do. My product is a combination of cashback from retail, but education. And you need both that automation and education when it comes to super. You can't just have one or the other. And there's a difference there. But I do, yeah, I do want to prove it, not just for the investors, but much for myself, so that at that part of my growth, I'm actually feeling like I'm in a position of power. If there's things I don't know, I'm going to go and find out. And I think it comes back to the tenacity that you have, the passion you have around the idea. And I do love from a lot of VCs and investors that primarily they are investing in you, right? Like, you are the head of that company and so much sits with you. And so that's probably where I feel my confidence, you know, growing and building the more that I understand.
I love that attitude, Lucy. And I think that I love to hear you say that, you know, it hasn't worked, but they're not me. And I love that attitude and that tenacity that you're bringing to it, because, you know, however we frame it, the startup economy, particularly for female-led businesses, is difficult. And so it is really important that we have that. Another question I wanted to talk to you about, which is, you know, given that you've set Tap the Gap up in a very specific way to make sure it's got these kind of, you know, retail nuance, and you've also got the behavioral piece that people are starting to be used to from things like Raise, for example. So, you know, you're earning as you spend, which is great. if you think again, you know, we look at the stats from the state of startups report and we go, okay, the next couple of years, 92% of founders are going to be looking to raise in 2024 and 2025. How does that tenacity particularly come to bear when you prepare Tap the Gap to stand out? You mentioned earlier there are a few different competitors in the super space. So how does Tap the Gap stand out? How do you take it to market with a real USP?
I think it's all about story and narrative. And it is about explaining to people what's different about your product. Where have you come from? You know, my story is different. I haven't come from a product background or a finance background. I am a creative. I, you know, was brought up by my wonderful mum who ended up retiring with Nate Super, right? She was a single mum of four, a teacher, probably where I get my educational edge from, I'm hoping. But, you know, her story was one of not having that security around her when she retired. And, you know, there's social justice involved in that for me. I'm not coming at it purely from a, hey, let's all save money when we go shopping. It is about behavioral change and social change because that's my story. You know, I can be really well versed on super, but I'm not coming at it from a product lens. I'm coming at it from a human lens. And that's my difference. And I can see the competitors in the space and what they think of first. And I think of the woman retiring at 65 being more likely to be homeless, you know, being more likely to live longer than her partner and not have the money to look after herself. And that's where I've driven the product from, is that human lens. So when I tell my story, it connects with people. Hopefully most of the time that's the feedback I've got, in that I do understand the psychology behind super and why we don't think about it. And I'm coming at it from a completely different point of view. And that's why Tap the Gap is different, because it talks to women in a space where they're already engaged, right? Shopping. That's what we do. Like, women own the purse. We're going to be, you know, controlling 75% of discretionary spend by 2025. Like, we are a power force and we need to lean into that. And corporate Australia has a responsibility to help recognize that for women. So if you are a retailer, being part of a program like this says that, yeah, I recognize that women are working to hold up our economy. They're not getting paid for it. And I'm going to show my support for that by giving an exclusive discount that women can turn into cashback that goes into their super. It's a very different philosophy that's driven by purpose, not pure product.
I think that setting up Tap the Gap with that very intentional, like, marketing product story at the heart of it is really compelling. It's great to hear that you're also finding that when you're out in the market talking to people about it.
It's fundamental, right? Like, these are fundamental rights that everyone in Australia should really have, that financial literacy, but women in particular, because we are so disadvantaged. And it's not to say that people don't want this information. Like, people are searching for it. And you can see the wave of interest growing, especially considering things like the WGEA report that came out last year, really looking at employers and how well they are paying their women. Culture is one of the biggest drivers of acquisition and retention for any company today. And their people are their most valuable asset in, you know, majority of companies. So there's a very strong correlation in how well an employer is serving their female staff and their trajectory for growth themselves.
I think it's great. Lisa, I want to ask you a couple of specific questions about the tech itself. So just explain to us, if we're using Tap the Gap, you know, we're part of your trial, we have it, it's on our phone. How does it work? What happens?
So essentially you can go and shop at a store like you normally would, one of your favourite brands. Say you shop at The Iconic, for example, you buy this jumper, it's $100, and they're offering you a 10% discount. You pay the $100, you get that 10% back. It comes back to you instantly as cash back, and Tap the Gap pushes that directly into your super fund of choice. So that can happen anything from your groceries to buying clothes, buying makeup, jewelry. You choose if you want to Tap the Gap and put that money in, or you don't have to. And then the second part of it is that every day there's a little tip of the day that pops up on your home screen, gives you a tiny bit of information on super, and it's gamified learning.
And can we talk a bit about how the retail side of it works, Lucy? So from how you've explained it, evidently the biggest beneficiaries are going to be the people who use it, are going to be the women who use it. But I think also, you've talked to employers and how they can use that to create and enhance their employee experience is amazing. But then also it feels as though this would be really beneficial for retailers, no? Is that part of your offering?
Yeah. So look, for retailers, it's the opportunity to, retain those customers, have a deeper relationship with them, but also be a brand that's sitting alongside an idea that's supporting women. It's showing that you're investing in their future. It's more than just a kind of quick cashback, because that $10 that I save on the jumper, the reality is if I put $10 aside every week, that's $20,000 in 30 years' time, and people don't know that. And that's where it is about, yes, small bits of cash are the thing that's going to make a difference. And a retailer, by supporting this, is saying, yeah, I do support women. They're my main buyer. And it's great brand association for them to do that.
I think from the tech perspective, what's so great about it is a couple of things. Like from a customer standpoint, for us to use it, very easy, super low friction for us to use it. But I also think, from a retailer perspective, it's, just like anything else that they're going to set up to give money back to its existing tech, right? So it's not a huge buy from that end either.
Yeah, look, when you think about it, there are lots of cashback programs around there. There definitely are. There's lots of loyalty programs. There's lots of things that will drive that retention and that relationship with the customer, which, I've spent a lot of time working in that CRM space in the ad world. I know how important those interactions are. But yeah, from a retailer, it is a very similar model. However, there have been reports in the loyalty space that consumers are really tired of the pointless points, if that makes sense. They're looking for loyalty programs that actually stand for something more. And this is a rewards or a loyalty program, but we're going to reward you now, but in 30 years' time, 20 years' time, and that reward will be greater than any points that you can earn today.
I know that we're all, really keen to understand. We've kind of skirted around it a bit today, but it strikes me that probably a really important part of this is actually changing our habits around superannuation. Is that right?
Yes, it is. So, and look, that's my biggest challenge. I won't, skirt away from that. Most of the conversations I'm having is, I know that people don't care about super. I know they don't think about super. And we need to make them care. And that's why the engagement part and the education part is really important. Because once you have a conversation with someone about not only how straightforward it is, how important it is, and how simple it is to change, they're like, oh, that's a no-brainer. An example which was definitely an aha moment for me in my founder journey. And I met this lovely woman who's a psychologist. She was working on an event series. We just started talking, as you do, swap your founder stories. And she said, oh, super, that's really interesting, actually. I don't know much about my super. It's pretty much what everyone says. Oh, I should really get onto that. And I said, oh, look, there's probably, how old are you? Oh, I'm 28. I said, oh, great. There's probably like three really simple things you can do before you're 30. She's like, oh, right, that's really interesting. Anyway, she messaged me on LinkedIn later and I sent her these three dot points. It was three dot points, three pieces of information in text message. And I saw her a month later. She said to me, "Lucy, I can't tell you, the way you explained that to me, the information you sent made me feel so confident that I called up my super fund. I had a chat with them. I even changed my investment choice. And I spoke to my dad about it." And I kind of nearly cried on the spot. I'm like, like anyone that you know that works in super knows that getting someone to shift their investment, which is choosing where they actually put their money, you know, you might go the whole time that you have a customer and they'll never do that action because they just don't even know that they have that option.
I think a couple of things that come out of that that are amazing, Lucy. So the first one is, I think you're going to be like the barefoot investor of super, you know, breaking it down and we'll all suddenly. Now, the second thing, it would be remiss of me not to ask, what are the three things, Lucy? We want to know what the three things are.
Okay. So the first one is you have to consolidate your super, which they call, but it's round up your super. So just check if you've got more than one super fund. And if you're like me, I had like 100 jobs when I was starting out, being a writer, waitressing, doing all this stuff, working at uni. And you can actually just call up your super fund. They will search for any lost super for you and they'll pull it all together into your current super. They do the hard work. This is it. You don't have to do it.
Yeah, because it's a great outcome for them, right? If you have more money with them, it makes them more money. So they're happy to do that for you.
Correct. And then you're not paying extra sets of fees. Then the second one that you can do is look at an additional contribution from the government. And so if you're earning under 60 grand, you might be eligible for a co-contribution from the government. And that is literally $500 cold hard cash the government will give you into your super. So, you know, think about it in that way. You have to match the contribution and there's more details on that. We could put a link in the notes to do that. And that's, I mean, that's a no-brainer as well. That's an extra $500 every year until you kind of get above that earning capacity. And then the last one is really looking at your investment choice, because when you're young, you are more likely, and this is not financial advice, this is financial education, but you are more likely to take on a higher risk investment. And that means that you can choose something that has more likely to have high returns, but also might lose a bit more. The reason being that you've got all those years to make up for it. If you're 55, you're probably not going to be recommended to have a high risk investment choice. But when you're young, I mean, that's what I did. It had a phenomenal effect on my super. So you really want to just call up, have to work out if it's right for you. You might not like to take risks. But a lot of what people don't realize is where the super is being invested. So if you're in the default category, which is generally what they call the core default or the core product, you might be investing in fossil fuels and you don't know if that feels okay for you. You might want to go with an ethical option. A lot of people don't know that, you know, you can choose to invest only in ethical companies. You can do that through particular funds that are ethically driven, but also you can have that option in your general fund. So yeah, you really can just look at those three simple things and that could boost your super massively.
Well, they're amazing. I'm not, I absolutely love that that happened for you, you know, that you got to see, you know, the same person and the experience that she'd had. And I think it also shows what an impact you're going to be able to make, you know, through Tap the Gap with that advice. It's great that our listeners to Flip the Focus got those three for free. That's a very good insight. And thank you for that. And it also leads us nicely into the three questions that we ask every guest on the series. And the first one of those is, if you were talking to somebody who's looking to make the move that you made, so moving from a full-time career into founder status, what advice would you give them?
So the advice that I would give someone who's wanting to take this jump into being a startup founder is just believe first and foremost that you deserve to be here, that you can belong, because I think a lot of women in particular or people who aren't of this world think, oh, can I do this? I don't really know much about it. I don't know anyone. You absolutely can. And I think that's about just jumping in and working out, is this a space that really fills your cup? You know, I think I knew, and that's part of the way how I made my decision to go full time. It was brewing inside me, but I felt like I've really found my people, you know, people that I met on my courses, people that I met in the community. There's people that are doing great things, like amazingly incredible creative things. They're changing the world. And to be around that every other day, yes, it's hard work and there's a lot of no's and rejection, but just know that you can fit in is probably what I would say. And go and try, you know, go and do a start make course or go and do something, like dip your toe in. You don't have to go full throttle straight away. You know, everyone's got a different personality type for those things. I've obviously got a family, I've got a mortgage to pay. You know, these are big decisions you make when you decide to just go full time on something, but it's not easy. You've really got to want to do it. So I would say go and test, see how you feel about that space and do it for a few months and see if it's the thing that you wake up thinking about, and then you know you're stuck.
I love that advice. And I, one of the things that you know, we've talked about a little bit with the other guests we've asked that question to, is this brilliant ability of tech to make those things possible. You know, you've had this great idea. The tech exists for you to basically do whatever you want to do, you know, to make it happen. And nobody belongs there any more than you do. I think that's such a great takeout, Lucy. You know, there's a little bit, I think, of imposter syndrome for a lot of us a lot of the time. And I can imagine that particularly being a founder, because it really is your name over the door. You know, that's quite a big, it's quite a big step. But I love your advice of, you know, just go for it. Like you belong here and you deserve to do it. That's gorgeous. Okay, so our second question, Lucy, is if you had a magic wand and you could vanquish or validate any aspect of the tech landscape for founders in Australia, what would you choose and why would you choose it?
Okay, so if there's one thing that I could get rid of, absolutely stamp it out, I think it would be the fear that people have surrounding investing in women. And I think that comes from both sides. That's the fear that women have that they're not going to make it, that they're not good enough, that, you know, it's not possible for them, you know, growing a company and raising a family or whatever that might be. And I want to take away that fear that investors have, that it's going to ruin my reputation, or I'm going to, you know, my fund is going to fall apart. Like, I really want to translate the energy and the mindset that we have in the startup world to this problem. Like, why aren't we as fearless in the way we support women as we are in the way that we build companies?
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, the further along the route we go, the more evidence that we have that that absolutely is the case, that they do work and that they deliver. And I think, you know, we're almost living in a post-data world right now, because we've had all the stats for a really long time and they're not making the shift that we would like them to make. So I love that if you could just get rid of that, you know, that's what you would do. Our third question is, if there are three things or a couple of things that each of us listening today could do that would help amplify female voices in Australian tech, what would they be?
I'd probably say, you know, really simple things, that is, share those stories, okay, and talk. And I mean, do that on social media, even if it's a forward or a follow or a like. If there's something you've heard about or read about, do that, because it does help build traction for these women. Talk to your friends about it.
You know, actually sitting here listening to you today, I think, yeah, you know, we could be doing this. More of us could be doing this. It is a practical thing. You can learn how to do it and you can have the confidence and go out there and make it happen. And I love that you've brought that to the show. So thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, it's been a real pleasure to share. There's obviously a long way to go and lots of work to do. But yeah, I'd love for anyone who wants to chat to me at any stage It, I love having a conversation with women about super, which sounds really boring, but it's not when you come to Tap
You've made it non-boring, Louise, and that maybe that's the biggest thing that Tap the Gap's doing outside of improving our financial futures. You've actually made super not boring anymore.
That is, that's a goal. So yeah, where our catchphrase is don't get super mad, get super even. So, you know, you need to get out there and make it happen because you deserve it. All the women out there, you work really hard and, yeah, it's been such a pleasure to be part of this series. You're doing amazing work and thanks so much for the opportunity to talk about my passion and my dream.
Thanks, Lucy. It's been amazing.